By this means in the final analysis that our loyalties must become ecumenical rather than sectional. Every nation must now develop an overriding loyalty to mankind as a whole in order to preserve the best in their individual societies. This call for a worldwide fellowship that lifts neighborly concern beyond one's tribe, race, class, and nation is in reality a call for an all-embracing, embracing an unconditional love for all mankind. This oft misunderstood, this oft misinterpreted concept, so readily dismissed by the Nietzsche's of the world as a weak and cowardly force, has now become an absolute necessity for the survival of man. When I speak of love, I'm not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I'm not speaking of that force which is just emotional bosh. I'm speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Love is somehow the key that unlocks the door which leads to ultimate reality. This Hindu, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist belief about ultimate reality is beautifully summed up in the first epistle of St. John. Let us love one another.
Yes.
For love is God.
Yes.
And everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. If we love one another, God dwelleth in us, and his love is perfected in us. Let us hope that this spirit will become the order of the day. We can no longer afford to worship the God of hate, bow before the altar of retaliation. The oceans of history are made turbulent by the ever-rising tides of hate. History is cluttered with the wreckage of nations and individuals that pursue this self-defeating path of hate. As Arnold Toynbee says, love is the ultimate force that makes for the saving choice of life and good against the damning choice of death and evil. Therefore, the first hope in our inventory must be the hope that love is going to have the last word, unquote. We are now faced with the fact, my friends, that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now in this unfolding conundrum of life and history.
You know that.
That is such a thing as being too late. Procrastination is still the thief of time. Life often leaves us standing bare, naked, and dejected with the loss of it.
Preaching love and freedom for his fellow men. He was dreaming of the day peace would come to earth to stay, and he spread this message all across the land.
Of the drum major instinct,
turn the other
that some
cheek.
People have
he please
to feel superior,
love thy neighbor.
A need that some people have to feel that they are first, and to feel that their white skin ordained them to be first.
Make this plain today, because I'm against it so heavily.
And they have said over and over again, in ways that we see with our own eyes. In fact, not too long ago, a man down in Mississippi said that God was a charter member of the White Citizens Council. And so, God being the charter member means that everybody who's in that has a kind of divinity, a kind of superiority. And think of what has happened in history as a result this perverted use of the drum major instinct led to the most tragic prejudice, the most tragic expressions of man's inhumanity to man. And not only does this thing go into the racial struggle, it goes into the struggle between nations. And I would submit to you this morning that what is wrong in the world today is of a nation.
Well, the murders never cease. Are they men or are they beasts? What do they ever hope to gain? Will my country is it too late for us all? And Martin Luther King.
And I want to thank God once more for allowing me to be here with you. I left Atlanta this morning, and as we got started on the plane, there were six of us. The pilot said, over the public address system, we are sorry for the delay. But we have Dr. Martin Luther King on the plane. And to be sure that all of the bags were checked. And to be sure that nothing would be wrong on the plane, we had to check out everything carefully. And we've had the plane protected and guarded all night. And then I got into Memphis, and some began to say the threats, or talk about the threats that were out, or what would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead, but it really doesn't matter with me now. Because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
This great man is dead. Oh, yeah. Well, the murders never cease. What do they ever hope to gain? Will my country fall, stand or fall? Is it too late for us all? And did Martin Luther King just die in vain? Cause he'd seen the mountaintop. And he knew he could not stop. Always living with the threat of death will bring. What will happen now that he is dead? He was for equality for all people, you and me. Full of love and goodwill, hate was not his way. He was not a violent man. Tell me, folks, if you can, just why was he shot down the other day? He'd seen the mountaintop, and he knew he could not stop. Always living with a threat of death ahead. Folks, you'd better run.
You are listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Stay tuned for Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. Welcome back.
Welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report, with the emphasis on your community and labor report. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash, and it's great to be back not only in the station, but back on the air after almost a year.
Indeed, the last program I did was on Martin Luther King's holiday, the national holiday, and that's today, so it's almost feels kind of prophetic to be back, but we have some serious responsibilities. We're going to have lots of time in the weeks to come to talk about all the things that happen and all the plans and hopes and projects to be coming your way with you helping to construct them, because the bottom line is the listeners absolutely saved this station. It was the community sector of your community and labor report that came through and rebounded and acted with intensity and with heart and with creativity to build this station into what it will be in the millennium to come. Right, Ken?
I think you're setting me up for something, but yes, right. But there are a lot of producers in there also, and we need, right now, we need producers and the community, because we've been through a year of struggle, and we struggle so hard so that we can continue the struggle, that we can continue to fight for the issues that are out there. But the way to do that on this Martin Luther King birthday is to continue this station, and the way to continue this station right now, the thing we need right now is money. What we need is funds to continue this station. 209-2950, area code 212, on this Martin Luther King birthday, for WBAI, which is in the business of struggle, in the business of movement building. 219-209-2950.
Actually, it's 209, not 219.
It's been a long time.
212-209-2950. Well, we do have a lot of responsibilities because being back is joyous, and I cannot tell you what it felt like to walk through an open door. And against the backdrop of Martin Luther King, an examination of his legacy, not a kind of maudlin remembrance of King and just putting him in some sort of nebulous dream state, but the real legacy of Martin Luther King was against war and against poverty. You and I, Ken, have long said that economic rights are the kind of human rights issue of the new millennium, and that's what we have to move to. And if WBAI is going to be what's been missing for a while, an activist enclave to stimulate social transformation and struggle, we need to be solvent. I'm sure most of our listeners know, have suffered a $2.8 million hit on the national level. But what's great now is there's been a reorganization that's taking place, and a lot of the funds that we get are going to be returned to the local stations so that we can evolve and grow. And we have so many hopes and so many plans, and we have such a broad community of resistors now who have been honed in the process of social struggle, that it is a bright and shining prospect for what this year is going to look like that is ahead of us. We have made $42,000 today thus far, and we're going to try to make $20,000 in the next 2 hours, and we had hoped that this would be a $100,000 day. You'd be surprised how depleted the station is, and we invite all of you to come down and experience it and be part of it, part of its joy, but it is economically depleted. And it's depleted because we've had a brutal struggle that is now past us, and we have to move forward. What a wonderful thing to have gone up to the guard downstairs and not have to check in on the list and not be greeted by a police officer who had pre-identified us and prevented us from coming in. What a wonderful thing to see the front door wide open and people just charging in here, looking good, feeling good, effusive in their sensitivities. And what a wonderful thing to hear Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. on the air today, who embodies the spirit, the conjuncture of fighting again against war and for economic and social justice issues and egalitarianism and human rights.
209-2950 in area code 212. We may be depleted in terms of money right now because of the struggle of the last year, but we're not depleted in terms of energy. We're not depleted in terms of the listeners being involved. We have certain major assets that we've gained in the past year because of the struggle, and the first among them, I think, is the listener involvement that started and continued through the struggle. In addition to that, we have WBIX, we have Free Speech Radio News. There are a number of things that have been built up through the struggle over the last year. We're coming back stronger than ever, and the fact that right now they depleted the money supply, we'll get that back, and we're going to get that back with your help if you dial 212-209-2950. And what better day than on the holiday of the birth of Dr. Martin Luther King to replenish this station, 212-209-2950.
You know, Ken, one of the things that we have to acknowledge, not everybody necessarily knows what Free Speech Radio News is, but we have long had a critique that the national news was not as impactful and hard-hitting and oriented to social justice as it should be, because the whole idea of WBAI is to provide information.
You're talking about the Pacifica National News.
I said the Pacifica right. National News. Exactly. The national news in general, homogenized and globalized, absolutely, but the Pacifica National News. And we had the creative efforts of a number of people who are going to be here at 5 o'clock to create a new news service, which is now going out over 50 stations. 50 affiliates, more than actually we've ever had with the Pacifica National News. And they have correspondents in every single area of the world. We're going to hear about the tragedy tonight in Goma, the volcanic eruption that has once again oppressed the area of the Congo and very many of the same refugees who fled from Rwanda. We're going to take a look at the Middle East, but all of this is to provide information for the purpose of organizing to transform the power relationships in the society, and that's what BAI, and that's what the history of Pacifica is. And I want to say another thing. When I thought at that grand, wonderful moment where people erupted into laughter and joy and applause when we realized that we were going to bring back the fired and banned only about a Saturday ago. seems like years ago, time, but yeah. Only a Saturday ago. What we had won was not just WBAI. We had won a network, the potential for linking together five stations. Los Angeles, second biggest city in the world. Houston, home of the death penalty. Washington, D.C., the belly of the beast, and New York, the belly of capital. Berkeley, the home of the working class, really, and labor organizing, linked together in political, progressive, revolutionist thought, iconoclast, breaking down icons and stereotypes, and fighting together for social justice, in conjunction with a new group of affiliates who will be brought to us through the efforts of Free Speech Radio News. It's been a wonderful, creative, thoughtful year, and it couldn't happen at a better time to bring it all together than on Martin Luther King's national holiday, a holiday that we know is still, in many areas, not fully organized around, not fully appreciated or even honored. But it's not something that is moribund or in the past. It is with us now because it provides a signpost, a path for us to follow towards the cause of transformation, away from disempowerment and away from being disenfranchised and voiceless. We have our wonderful WBAI network back. Yes, it's a network. It's five stations. It's affiliates. It's listeners who are here, joyous. As a matter of fact, they insisted. We may have to do that. We may have to do that, Ken. Later on, the listeners who are now answering the phones in the back said that they wanted to come in and sing along with something inside so strong. And I think we're going to have
them.
To bow.
Of Only if you Okay, them. Then we got a deal.
Well, I would again like to ask you all to call in and support whose station? Your station at 212-209-2950. And I want to give a little preview of what we're going to be doing in the next 2 hours in keeping with the celebration of Martin Luther King's holiday. We have one of the people who's going to be with us shortly, Ann Braden, who is absolutely one of my heroines. She, in 1954, was prosecuted under the Sedition Act after she bought a home in Kentucky. She bought a home for a black couple. She is white, her husband, Carl Braden. They deliberately bought it because it was in an integrated area. It wasn't in an integrated area. It was in an area that was white, and the black couple wanted to buy a home, and Ann and Carl Braden bought it. And the home was firebombed, and after that they were prosecuted under the Sedition Act, and Carl got a 15-year jail sentence. Since that time, there is nothing that happens in the South that Ann Braden has not been part of. She went on to form the Southern Organizing Committee, the Kentucky Alliance. We're going to find out a lot more about it. And, of course, was a friend and a contemporary of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And she's going to be with us telling us what's been happening and what the legacy of Dr. King is. And then we came up with some, and I don't even think Bernard White has this kind of stuff, Ken. We found some vinyl of speeches that Dr. King made before the labor movement that I think really are just about one of a kind now. And after all, This is a show that has as its root and its base people who are working, people who aspire to be in the working class with and in a work situation with better conditions and better pay, and with social justice. So it'll be thrilling to hear Dr. King speaking before labor around the issues of war and peace.
And later in the show, we have William Madisha, who is the president of the Congress of South African Trade Unions, and he's also the president of the South African Teachers Union, to talk about the heritage of Martin Luther King and also what's happening in South Africa and Africa now. And first up, we're going to have Bill Fletcher in a few minutes, and he is the new head of TransAfrica, and he used to be the assistant to the president of the AFL-CIO. So we're going to talk to him about labor, we're going to talk to him about Africa, about TransAfrica, and of course about Dr. Martin Luther King and his heritage.
And part of that heritage, which I know Bill is going to get into, is the issue of reparations, because there is still that unfulfilled reality of what has not been brought to us. And so when I on the way here, was listening to Laura Bush make one of her statements about Martin Luther King, and well, we're going to find out the real legacy of Martin Luther King, and we're going to put on a beautiful piece now, but we have an obligation. We always did, and we always will. If we want to maintain this station, if we want to keep it, we have to also finance it. A lot of people who protested appropriately complained about some of the restrictions that began to be put on the station, taking money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And there are many issues. If we don't take that money, if we don't take that money, which is a percentage of our budget, then how do we finance the station, and what additional implications does this have for the contribution of listeners? So these are many of the issues that have to still be resolved, and the best way to resolve them right now is, again, to know that it is our station, and with that, one of the responsibilities is its maintenance financially. So we're going to give you a rest in a minute and go to the long road to freedom.
Maintenance financially, 212-209-2950.
And who are you?
And I'm Ken Nash for Building Bridges, your community and labor report.
And I'm Mimi Rosenberg, and it is a pleasure to be back, and we hope to have a wonderful year bringing you a lot of information about your struggles, our struggles in the working class, and to make sure that the working class is that entity, that group, those people that inherit the earth, and with justice and with all the riches that they help to create. And with that, too, the long road to freedom, because it has been in so many ways, and it's lovely to be back. And give us your support.
conclude by saying our goal is freedom. And I believe we're going to get there. Because however much she strays away from it, the goal of America is freedom. Abused and scorned, though we may be as a people, our destiny somehow is tied up with the destiny of America. Before the Pilgrim Fathers landed at Plymouth, we were here. Before Jefferson wrote the beautiful words from the Declaration of Independence, we were here. Before the beautiful words of the Star-Spangled Banner were written, we were here. And for more than two centuries, our forebears labored here without wages. They made cotton king, and they built the homes of their masters in the midst of the most humiliating and oppressive conditions. And yet out of a bottomless vitality, they continued to grow and develop. And if the inexpressible cruelties of slavery couldn't stop us, the opposition that we now face will surely fail. We're going to win our freedom. We're going to win our freedom because both the sacred heritage of our nation and the eternal will of the Almighty God are embodied in our echoing demands. And so I can still sing, we shall overcome, we shall overcome, because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right, no lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right, truth crushed earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right, truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mounting of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to speed up the day when all of God's children all over this nation, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
And this is a Building Bridges, Your Community and Labor Report special, and I'm very pleased to have with us Bill Fletcher. You know, Bill Fletcher has a very difficult road ahead. He follows Randall Robinson, who founded TransAfrica in 1976, and recently retired as its president in October. Fletcher is a longtime labor leader, was a former assistant to AFL-CIO President John Sweeney, and then became the vice president of the George Meany National Labor College. He's also co-chair of the Black Radical Congress. Many black organizations have organized almost exclusively on domestic issues, but, said Bill Fletcher, he called it a mistake because issues such as AIDS in Africa also hit close to home. We need to be on the streets, in the boardrooms, and on Capitol Hill to address these issues. And with that, Bill Fletcher, it's a pleasure to have you in your inaugural debut on WBAI on Martin Luther King's holiday to talk to us about your new assumed position as president of TransAfrica.
Thank you, Mimi. I'm really glad to be on the program, and I also want to welcome you all back after a period of exile and the victories that have taken place now in Pacifica. So congratulations to you as well.
Bill, before we talk about the present, I mean, let's talk about the present, but let's put it in the context of the past, and let's put it in the context of Dr. Martin Luther King.
Where do you want me to start?
I want you just to pull out some things that you think are important to remember for now of the heritage of Dr. King.
Well, on Friday I gave a talk to a group where I emphasized that there are two kings, two Dr. Kings. There's a sanitized Dr. King who has been paraded around to us since shortly after his death. It's the king that we hear when we hear only brief clips from the I Have a Dream speech. It's the king who has been sanitized in such a way that we get the notion that he was simply a man of ideas. And then there's the real king, who was a troublemaker, who was an organizer, who was an agitator, who was someone who believed in organization, someone that dared to challenge the U.S. on foreign policy, spoke out in 1967 against the Vietnam War. And that was the real king. And what we have seen since his assassination in 1968 has been a systematic effort to turn him into something else, to turn him, among other things, into a saint and take him away from the realities of humanity. So I think one of the things that's important each year when we have these programs to honor Dr. King is that we remind people as to who he actually was, the trials that he had to face, the hounding by the FBI, the way that in 1967 when he spoke up against the war, he was deserted by many of his former allies. He was condemned by the official media of this country for speaking up on things allegedly he didn't know anything about. I think that's the king that we have to remind people about on January 15th.
I couldn't help but think, as we look at the legacy of Dr. King, about an issue that has become prominent but was somewhat truncated in its successful hearing in New York because of the activities around 9/11, and that is the issue of reparations, which was raised by the African Americans or people of African descent who went to the not long ago held conference in South Africa, which I know you were at. And of course, Randall Robinson had published a book and been very prominent in the fight around reparations. What now is the stand of yourself, Bill Fletcher, and your position in the helm now of TransAfrica around the issue of that unrequited, unrecognized reality that blacks have still not gotten reparations for what they have suffered historically in the society and continue indeed to suffer?
Well, first of all, I was unable to attend Durban. I was supposed to go, but that's a longer story. I was unable to attend. But what we've been trying to grapple with in TransAfrica is what should our role be in the reparations struggle? And what we seem to be coming towards is that TransAfrica Forum has a major role to play in helping to internationalize the reparations struggle. There are people on the ground in the United States, such as the forces organized around in COBRA, who have had years of taking up the reparations struggle. And these forces need to be respected and supported. It's not up to TransAfrica to step in and try to displace them. And I want to make that very, very clear to your listeners, that that's not what our intent is at all. But I do believe that there, particularly coming out of the Durban conference, is a role for us to play in helping to broaden and internationalize the reparations struggle. And part of what I think about is this, that the reparations matter is about the first and foremost the recognition of the crime against humanity that was slavery and colonialism, and the fact that the countries of the global north, the United States, Europe, that they owe something for the destruction that they brought to the African continent and to its people. That's an ideological battle that is so critical. It has been focused at different points on this matter of the apology, the notion of apologizing for slavery and for colonialism, which some people denigrate, but I would argue is critically important because it starts to change and reset the historical record. But the other thing that's important is to look at the impact that colonialism and slavery had on the continent of Africa, whether the creation of these artificial national boundaries that have created to this today immense ethnic and so-called tribal conflicts, the pillage of the land and the people, so that part of what needs to take place is for the countries of the West to offer a development, real development assistance and debt cancellation, so that the countries of Africa can pursue a self-determined path of economic development. One thing that would be very, very useful, I think, to think about in terms of the broader issue of reparations is that it's linked to the fight against structural adjustment programs. These programs that have been started by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank that essentially blackmail countries into following a specific economic development course. The countries of Africa should follow the development course that they choose. So I think that TransAfrica has a role to play in this as allies of people who have been carrying out the struggle around reparations.
Bill, I wanted to, in a way, back up a bit and talk about the labor movement, back up in terms of your career in any event. Dr. King, of course, died in a labor struggle, and you've been involved with the AFL-CIO for a number of years as assistant to the president, John Sweeney. I wonder if you want to just take a look over where the labor movement is now. I mean, the labor movement, of course, was revived to some extent by the civil rights and other struggles during the 1960s, and we call it a labor movement, but is it even legitimate to call it a labor movement in that sense?
I think it's legitimate, Ken, to call it a trade union movement, that the labor movement is actually broader than those organizations that we call unions. That may sound semantical, but I think it's very important. I mean, there are groups like that have organized around immigrant rights. There are worker centers that have been set up. There's groups like Black Workers for Justice that I would argue are all part of the labor movement, even though they are not themselves unions. But if you speak about the trade union movement, yeah, I would say that there is a movement. I think that the movement's in deep trouble, and it's been in deep trouble for years. The coming to power in AFL-CIO of John Sweeney, Richard Trumka, and Linda Chavez Thompson, I think, brought with it a very great promise for some changes. And there have been important changes that have taken place. But the reality is that the trade union movement is more than the AFL-CIO. It's these affiliates, these different national unions that have a high degree of autonomy. And in my opinion, Ken, most of the unions, the leaderships of most of the unions, have frankly not taken very seriously the fact that we're getting our rears kicked. That in some cases, in too many cases, you have leaders that I think are more concerned about getting to retirement and getting out before someone turns the lights out than they are about what it will take to truly revive the movement. And so there are important contributions that Sweeney made in terms of raising the rhetoric about organizing, the critical importance of organizing, of providing certain forms of technical assistance. But I would say that I don't think that the AFL-CIO itself went far enough on this. And so now we have a situation where there's a recession, potentially a very deep one, where we have witnessed a layoff of about 1.5 million people over the last year. It has certainly hurt the union movement. I mean, it's absolutely astounding that labor leaders acted for years as if capitalism had somehow changed its spots and acted as if they didn't have to prepare for the eventuality of a recession. I don't know whether these individuals got caught up in all the hoopla around the so-called boom in the 90s or what, but there was absolutely no preparation for the downturn. So we lose members as a result of the recession. There has been insufficient urgency in terms of the issue of organizing. And so I think we're in a mess. There's no question about it.
Bill, your appointment really comes at a time of tremendous conservative resurgence. the discussion on the, as we battle economic or recession on one hand, the discussion about internationalism, if you will, is dominated really by talks of terrorism and corporate mega mergers instead of the development of Africa, the Caribbean, and Latin America. How do you progress? How do you move forward and become part of the mass progressive struggle in Trans-Africa, an activation of the working class, labor and otherwise, to see that the dialogue has got to shift and we've got to understand that the war has merely provided an opportunity to implement a repressive, very repressive deconstruction of civil liberties that have been won over periods of decades and that continues to crush the aspirations for economic justice, etc., of the third world.
You're absolutely right. It's amazing the impact of 9/11 in terms of changing the discussion. Just as by way of example, prior to 9/11, a massive demonstration, as you know, had been planned for Washington, D.C. for late September around the issues of global justice. 9/11 happens, and poof, that's off. And not only is it off, but what happens is that those that raise the challenge around the need for global justice start to be painted by the political right as being terrorists or soft on terrorism. This has spread to other forms of repression, as you're inferring. There are various forms of intimidation. We're living in this neo-McCarthyite atmosphere. And part of what I would say is that the response to this has to be a very high level of visibility. That is a speaking out against this repressive atmosphere. A friend of mine reminded me that the civil rights movement in the 1950s and early 60s helped to break the back of the original McCarthyism. That the mobilization on the ground, the challenge that was raised, helped to break the grip that McCarthyism had on the United States. I think that in some ways we need to learn from that, that the global justice movement, the fight around reparations, these fights cannot be postponed. And these are the fights that actually can start shifting the discourse. Because the thing that we have to remind people is that the issues that we confronted on September 10th did not disappear. The basic issues of global injustice, the AIDS, HIV/AIDS pandemic in Africa and Brazil, these things did not disappear on September 11th. These are still around. The conditions that the clerical fascists took advantage of in order to carry out the terrorist attacks on 9/11, those conditions, the fact that you have Brazilian kids wearing Bin Laden T-shirts, these conditions, they haven't vanished. And we have to speak to them. And we have to speak very loudly to them. And so I think that part of what I've been arguing the Trans-Africa Forum needs to do is be right smack in the middle of the global justice movement. That these basic issues of global injustice, whether it's pharmaceutical genocide, international issues of reparations, the lack of development in Africa, the Caribbean, Latin America, the fact that the Caribbean is being marginalized in this new economy, these are the issues that we have to bring front and center. And I'm actually optimistic in the long run about it.
Well, Bill, I think that you're very right in bringing up that notion that the civil rights movement and the movement itself was the thing that did McCarthyism in. And there are a lot of people that have been saying, for instance, Jesse Jackson at the FL-CIO convention gave a stirring speech saying that we need to start marching now, but that hasn't happened and he wasn't listened to.
That's right.
And I think that that is the kind of heritage of Martin Luther King that we have to draw upon to celebrate on this day. We want to thank you very much for being with us, and we're going to be talking with you again in the future as to your plans for Trans-Africa, not only your plans, but what you're doing.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on.
Bill, it's a pleasure, really. I mean, we've you know, been friends and followers of your career for so long, and to see somebody who has a class consciousness assume this tremendous and difficult mantle after the activity of somebody as charismatic as Randall Robinson, we wish you well, and know that the organization will be strengthened by all that all that you bring together. It's been a pleasure speaking with Bill Fletcher. And this is Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. And you are listening to an all-day special on the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. And we had been speaking with Bill Fletcher, who is the newly anointed president of TransAfrica, one of the organizations that started in the 70s with its founder, Randall Robinson, to fight around the issues of social justice in South Africa and, of course, against the apartheid movement, and has moved on to become prominent in issues around seeking reparations and focusing on cancellation of the debt and the other crushing realities that have sought to subvert the development of Africa. And it brings together TransAfrica, the issues, of course, and the aspirations of people of African descent here, as well as their compatriots on the continent itself. And we have some very interesting things still in store, but most importantly, what we have for you today is the return of a radio station with a heart and a conscience and a consciousness around issues that impact on the empowerment of those people who have been so beleaguered economically, politically, and socially in our society. This is a station now that is a foremost advocate around human rights. And we need to support WBAI, and we need to understand that we are part of that wonderful legacy of social struggle that was given to us by Dr. Martin Luther King, and we've all been informed by it, and particularly in the last year, many of us have been informed about it because we were forced to internalize our own politics and take a stand, and it's made us stronger, and it's made the station better, and it will grow by leaps and bounds in the period to come, but we've been saddled with enormous, enormous economic debt. And we needed to put together this one-day fundraiser as we prepare for yet another one to come with a little bit more definition and to it and a prolonged period of time. But we needed to put this together to begin to respond to the lack of funds that have been coming in appropriately, I might add, over the extended period of time of the former regime. And with that, we would really like you to put those volunteers who are in the back now, and there is a huge room of happy and elated and wonderful volunteers who are there to take your phone call. If you just call 212-219. Oh, my goodness, it's not even on the tip of my tongue anymore.
209-2950 and area code 212. That's what I've been away from the studio for almost a year. We haven't set foot in the studio for almost a year.
Well, some of us tried to.
Until last week. And everything just seems the same. Even our mailbox was still there, jammed full of mail from the last year, but it's like coming back home, and nothing's really, the physical layout is the same and everything's, but we haven't been here for a year. We weren't allowed back in here for a year, and now we're back, and most appropriately on Martin Luther King's birthday, and most emphatically and most appropriately here to help strengthen WBAI Radio, which over the last year we've built up a lot of alternative institutions. We've built the relationship with the listeners has been incredibly strengthened over the last year in the struggle. Our attitude and commitment to the station has been strengthened, if anything. But the opposition, the people that have been in control of the station over the last year, as Mimi has mentioned, have incurred massive debts. And what is it, $2.5 million, maybe $3 million? I think
it's
something of that magnitude.
Going to $3 million.
And we have to do some fundraising to get supplies in here to keep the station going, to pay salaries. And the way to do that is to come back to the listeners, back to you. Please call us at 212-209-2950. That's area code 212-209-2950, WBAI, and Pacifica. We were a bit wary about Pacifica before we were taken off the air. I mean, Pacifica was increasingly becoming an alien entity to us, and they did try to take over the station, and we foiled that attempt. But right now, we are, one of the good things that's happening is that Pacifica is back with us, with WBAI. Support WBAI. Support Pacifica Radio, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. You're in for the long haul.
You know, I can't help but think a little bit of the